This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. Just your reminder that there's only 60 days left until the pandemic is over, because that's Election Day. Today you'll hear how Live Action released a new video. The Kennedy streak is over in Massachusetts. Democrats don't know math. What's new? Pelosi got a haircut. Ilhan Omar is calling for an apology, and Trump really deserves one this time. First up, David Bonson writes on Facebook, "One of the things that just infuriates me about President Trump is that while he often takes credit for things he had nothing to do with, he also often refuses to take credit for things he did. Why in the world this administration and campaign is not informing Americans repeatedly that $1.128 trillion, that's all caps, capital T, trillion, in profits have been repatriated back on shore since its corporate tax reform bill passed. I realize most leftists will continue the lie that those tax cuts were for the rich, parentheses, my taxes went up, but some are not lying as much as just not super smart people. But what all people, left and right, smart and not smart, can and would appreciate is knowing that the corporate tax bill brought almost $1.2 trillion back to the United States. Do you think that capital has come in handy in the COVID contraction? Taking credit where not deserved is dishonest, but not taking credit where it is deserved is campaign malpractice." That's from David Bonson, always useful, helpful on Facebook. A new live-action video dropped last week on the Center for Medical Progress YouTube channel. Remember, this is David Daladin's undercover video company. I don't know what he calls it exactly. The video documents once more using some of the old Daladin undercover videos alongside some new courtroom questioning how Planned Parenthood officials and other abortion providers circumvent the federal partial birth abortion ban in order to deliver living babies and harvest their body parts. As usual, the video and the descriptions are horrific and gruesome, but it's also very revelatory. They have skirted the law by feigning the intention of murdering and dismembering the baby before it's born. So that's what's required by law. The murder must take place inside the womb. The baby must be dismembered inside the womb before it's born, according to law. While they actually allow for babies to be born partially dismembered while still alive in order to preserve the organs, which can then be sold for research and such. What kind of wicked nation are we? Remember, the same states that continue protecting these barbaric practices really, really care about the lives of black people. And they just want you to wear a mask in case it might help save even one life. These states can shut everything down, halt everything, because it might save one life. And yet, many of these states run by conservative legislatures and conservative governors can't end abortion. Excuse us if we're doubtful of your good intentions. Also, perhaps we ought to begin intending to follow these tyrannical shutdown laws, while we often actually fail to do so. Oops. There's a link to the new video in the show notes. Leah Berkowkis at townhall.com says the Kennedy political dynasty is over. Zilch. Fini. On Tuesday, the Senate race in Massachusetts was between Representative Joe Kennedy of Kennedy family fame and incumbent Senator Ed Markey. This race was viewed by many as the option between establishment Democrats and the hard progressive left. Kennedy, the establishment favorite, lost, becoming the first Kennedy to lose a race in Massachusetts history. Within hours after the polls had closed, Kennedy conceded the race, garnering only 46% of the votes, while Markey had 54. "Tonight is more than just a celebration of a movement," Markey said in his victory speech. "It is a reaffirmation of the need to have a movement, a progressive movement of young people demanding radical change, demanding justice, and looting targets." Okay, he didn't say the thing about the targets. But he also said it's a movement giving voice and power to young people when for far too long they have been ignored. Markey is a supporter of the Green New Deal, Medicare for all. Even Trump noted the significance on Twitter, pointing out that Pelosi had backed Kennedy. Pelosi had backed Kennedy. But he wasn't extreme enough, particularly on taxes or the Second Amendment. And AOC, of course, was quick to cheer the victory. Congratulations, Ed Markey. Yours is a victory for the progressive movement, for the 21st century policy, for the Green New Deal. She even had a cute little earth emoji there. She also thanked and praised everyone who got out the vote. Speaking of which, Hans von Spakovsky, which is a great name, writes at the American Mind about a recent New York Times piece speculating that President Trump's litigiousness and unfounded claims of fraud have increased the likelihood of epic post-election court fights. So there's this piece of the New York Times accusing Trump, basically, of ramping things up such that there's a greater likelihood of epic post-election court fights due to his litigiousness and unfounded claims of fraud. Okay, Trump is being overly litigious and has unfounded claims of fraud, saith the New York Times. The problem? The Democrats and progressives are the ones trying to force all mail elections or huge increases in absentee balloting while simultaneously eliminating safeguards against abuse and fraud. It's not Trump, it's not the Republicans, it's not conservatives, it's Democrats and progressives, by and large, overwhelmingly, who are pushing for all mail elections, that is, no in-person elections at all, just all mail-ins, or huge increases in absentee balloting, and they're also the same ones who are simultaneously trying to eliminate many of the safeguards against abuse and fraud related to elections, particularly mail-in and absentee balloting and such. The same Times story cites law professor Richard Pildes' count of at least 160 lawsuits filed by party organizations, campaigns, and interest groups related to election process, ballots, mail-in ballots, all-mail elections, absentee balloting, and all the safeguards or regulations related to election and election fraud. 160 lawsuits have been filed by party organizations, campaigns, and interest groups. This is in the same article. And the article notes breathlessly that the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee are involved in 40 of them. Are you following here? Follow. President Trump's litigiousness and unfounded claims of fraud have increased the likelihood of epic post-election court fights. And there are 160 current lawsuits. And Trump and the Republican National Committee are involved in 40 of them. And some of those 40 are actually just in response to Democratic lawsuits. Spakovsky says, for those familiar with basic arithmetic, the litigiousness is on the other side of the political aisle. And he takes a sip of tea. Perhaps the Times didn't bother to do the math. I mean, you know, 40 out of 160. Okay. So 120 of them are not from Trump or Republicans. And even of the 40 that are from Trump and Republicans, a whole pile of them are actually responses to Democratic lawsuits. In 2012, again, this is Spakovsky still, he says the Times published a story entitled Error and Fraud at Issue as Absentee Voting Rises. So 2012. Times, same newspaper, publishes a story entitled Error and Fraud at Issue as Absentee Voting Rises. That story concludes, Spakovsky says correctly, that, quote, votes cast by mail are less likely to be counted, more likely to be compromised, and more likely to be contested than those cast in a voting booth, statistics show, unquote. The rejection rate for absentee ballots, according to the New York Times in 2012, is double the rate for in-person voting. Two times the likelihood of a ballot being rejected if it's mailed in. according to the New York Times, in 2012. But it's definitely Trump's litigiousness that is leading to post-election court fights. Speaking of fights, that's why we need weapons for this war, which is the theme of our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st to the 3rd. You know we're going to be singing psalms and we're going to be feasting. There's going to be piles of time for hearty fellowship and a lineup of speakers ready to equip you for the battles you're facing in your life, in your families, in your churches, in your communities, in this nation. Douglas Wilson, George Grant, Glenn Sunshine, Rod Martin, David Bonson, Jeff Durbin, I'll be there, Gabe the Waterboy, Chocolate Knox, a bunch of representatives from the shows on the network, a special after-hours meet and greet with Darren Doan, all committed to showing you how God's word is a sharp sword to take with you into every battle. Please join us this October 1st to the 3rd as we seek to build a rowdy Christian culture for God's glory and our good. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register today. Next up, Nancy Pelosi got her haircut. Yeah, that's it. It was on Monday. She got a haircut on Monday. That's the story. She got her haircut inside a hair salon without a mask in San Francisco, which is illegal in the Socialist Republic of California, in the city of San Fran. It is illegal until September 1st. But if you remember correctly, Monday was not September 1st. It was the end of August. The uproar was big enough that Pelosi's office had to issue a response claiming that Nancy Pelosi always wears a mask and always complies with COVID requirements. Darn it. They didn't say darn it. I just added that for effect. The business owner of the hair salon shared her reaction to Pelosi's salon visit during a Fox News interview. Salon owner Erica Klaus told Fox News that independent stylists work in her salon and they rent salon chairs, which is common in hair salons. She says, quote, "I was like, are you kidding me right now?" She's obviously not from San Francisco. She's from the Bay Area. I don't know. She's from LA. I don't know. "Do I let this happen? What do I do?" The salon's owner said, adding, "It was a slap in the face that she went in, you know, that she feels that she can just go and get her stuff done while no one else can go in and I can't get work." The San Francisco mayor's office guidelines insist any service that requires your customer to remove their face covering are not permitted at this time. Pelosi's not alone, though. Not alone among the elites who don't think the regulations apply to them. Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney, actually I think it's Kennedy, well it might be Kenny, is facing strong criticism, particularly from local businesses in his city, after a photograph was taken Sunday of Kenny, it's Kenny, dining indoors at a restaurant in Maryland. He crossed state lines to have an inside dinner. Because he's special. Mark Vetri posted a picture of Mayor Kenny on Instagram. "Hi, Philly Mayor." It's at Philly Mayor. 3 exclamation points. "Glad you're enjoying indoor dining with no social distancing or mask wearing in Maryland tonight, while restaurants here in Philly close, suffer, and fight for every nickel just to survive. I guess all your press briefings and your narrative of unsafe indoor dining don't apply to you. Thank you for clearing it all up for us tonight." Thank you, emoji. Mayor Kenny replied on Twitter saying, "I know some are upset that I dined indoors in a restaurant in Maryland yesterday, but I am your high priest and I am pure and I may cross the state line." Okay, he didn't say that. He says, "I felt the risk was low because the county I visited has had fewer than 800 COVID-19 cases compared to over 33,000 cases in Philadelphia. I don't know how to do a Philadelphia accent. I'm sorry if my decision hurt those who've worked to keep their businesses going under difficult circumstances. So sorry, so sorry. But I am..." Anyways. Ilhan Omar is calling for an apology from Joy Reid after she described Muslims that encourage violence as radicalizing young people and asked whether Trump is any different. So Joy Reid, She's on MSNBC. She's interviewing these people, and she's describing Muslims. And she says, we in the American press, we describe Muslims that encourage violence as radicalizing young people. And she wanted to know whether Trump was any different. And the Twitters burned to the ground. Some called the comments blatant Islamophobia. And Ilhan Omar even tweeted, this kind of casual Islamophobia is hurtful and dangerous. We deserve better, and an apology for the painful moment for so many Muslims around our country should be forthcoming. Wait, what? I mean, I'm not carrying any water for Joy Reid, but just saying that Muslims sometimes encourage people to do violence is Islamophobia? I mean, is Islamophobia to say that some Muslims flew their planes into the Twin Towers? 9/11? Is that Islamophobia to say that? I mean, this is in the Quran. I mean, Muhammad taught jihad, holy war. What, is that Islamophobia? I don't know. Sort of confused. Anybody remember that famous press conference where Trump said that there were very fine people on both sides? Have you ever heard that before? Anybody? Anybody remember how he was not talking about white supremacists, but just normal Americans that didn't want monuments torn down? And remember how Trump asked the press at that conference where it will stop? He even asked, will they demand, you know, statues of Washington and Thomas Jefferson to come down next? Everybody laughed at Trump. They called him crazy. They said he was overreacting. In fact, I don't know, even comedian John Oliver joined in the laughter.
The president's concern seems to be that tearing down statues leads to a slippery slope.
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Okay, well, I'll tell you where it stops. Somewhere. Anytime someone asks, where does it stop? The answer is always, f***ing somewhere. You might let your kid have Twizzlers, but not inject black tar heroin. You don't just go, well, after the Twizzlers, where does it stop?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe it doesn't stop. On Monday, Mayor Muriel Bowser of Washington, D.C. said, John Oliver, hold my beer. She released a report on Twitter called D.C. Faces, tasked with evaluating public spaces to ensure the namesake legacy is consistent. I guess the namesake, as Washington's legacy, is consistent with hashtag D.C. values. So she's got this task force. It's evaluating, you know, statutes and public places and monuments to make sure that they're consistent with DC values. She added that she looks forward to reviewing and advancing their recommendations. Flip to page 22. Turns out there's a list of recommendations for removing, relocating, or contextualizing various monuments. There are 8 on the list. Christopher Columbus, Benjamin Franklin, and wait, Thomas Jefferson, and lo, the Washington Monument, and a George Washington statue. We await the profuse apologies of the press, and we hope that John Oliver hasn't been eating any Twizzlers. Finally, we note that New York City passed 1,000 shootings for this year, just this last Sunday, almost double the number it was this time last year. Peter Heck at Discern News notes the last time New York City passed the 1,000 shootings mark was in 2015, when there were 1,138 recorded for the entire year. New York City is currently on pace for more than 1,500 shootings in 2020. So we end somewhat where we began. You cannot treat human beings in the womb like tissue, like animals to be harvested, and expect your culture to carry on peacefully. Those lies, the lies that cover up that kind of bloodshed of the innocent, bleed literally into everything. That guilt bleeds into everything. That guilt is irrational. The shame is irrational, but it builds like an electric charge in a culture, and it must detonate eventually, somewhere, somehow. It must be released somehow. But in the meantime, it accumulates in more lies, more hypocrisy, careening and capricious, tyrannical policies, but the end result is always the same. More violence, more bloodshed, more destruction. You cannot celebrate the murder of babies and expect anything different. And yet, never forget that there is mercy for this bloodshed too. There is forgiveness for this insanity for anyone who will turn to Christ. He was crushed for our iniquities. He was bruised for our offenses. He was wounded for our transgressions. The cross is the place where all the static goes to die. All the enmity, all the guilt, all the shame. If we will look to him, all our guilt and shame can be detonated there. By his stripes, we are healed. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. You can find this and all our shows at crosspolitic.com or on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search Fight Laugh Feast. Become a Fight Laugh Feast club member and get a shirt that says Fight Laugh Feast on it. Also, access to tons of extended discussions with people we've had interviews with, like George Grant, Sho Baraka, David French, C.R. Wiley, Eric Erickson, Maj Touré, Doug and Nancy Wilson, Walter Williams, Gary DeMar, and our very own Worldview Shotgun series. You also will get $100 off your registration for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through 3rd. Go to FightLaughFeast.com and register now. Have a great day.